Yeah, Michael, thanks for coming to our show. Thanks for being here and telling us a little bit about your third visit to the film festival here in Oldenburg. Two movies you presented first in 2008, and a tribute, and then you came back for the 50th anniversary of Woodstock, and now you're back for a double feature of Wolfen. You're presenting Wolfen, and there's a documentary about this movie. So Oldenburg is quite something for you, I guess.
Well, you know, I made 100 movies, but they were all documentaries. That my story is that I went to Columbia Medical School in New York, and I had friends from Ohio that were studying films with Martin Scorsese down in NYU at the time. Columbia was uptown, and that was downtown. And I couldn't concentrate on medicine because so many things were happening socially in the 60s. So I left medical school specifically not to make feature films, but to make documentaries, political documentaries. And of course, you could observe that Woodstock was intensely political. It was the first rock and roll, or whatever you want to call it, musical event in a farmland, in forest and lakes and so forth. It was part of the ecological movement. I think that's part of the reason why it's lasted. Now we've got climate change, now we've got resource shortages and so on. So it remains current. And then Wolfen was sort of the first metaphoric ecological thriller with wolves and Indians and so on. So I think Oldenburg finds that current. You know, they find them going on in time. I think that's why they invite me. But as I say, I did other films, but now I was a scientist before I became a filmmaker, and now I've gone back to it. And it's been decades now since I've made any movies, and it's hard to get back into it. In some sense, movies, it seems so trivial. What the hell? You know, we've got Trump. We've got big problems. Why aren't we dealing with them? And of course, movies can do marvelously dealing with a Trump and changing people's minds. So that's cool.
That's maybe up for the young filmmakers who are here as well, because Oldenburg is quite a young festival, and it always has invited filmmakers from all over the world who are just starting out in their career. So let's see what they have got.
That's right. Well, but again, I think other people than I see that there's more turning inward. And I don't mean that they don't examine questions, but maybe it's about transsexual questions and child right and whatever. In terms of the big picture, you know, climate change is 55 billion tons of annual greenhouse gas emissions. I mean, it's gigantic. Climate change right now, if you take just fossil fuels, just fossil fuel burning alone, is killing 5 fucking million people a year. Now, that's 50 times more than Gaza and Ukraine and everything else. But there's really no attention to it. We're not reducing fossil fuels. Every time, you know, somebody has a little shortage or my living standard is costing more, they hit the German politicians and everyone else, lower those prices, you know, drill, baby, drill. And everyone does it, not just Trump. So we do need young filmmakers, but I guess my observation would be very few of them are taking on big power. They do more slice of life and more personal films, and I would say we need both.
Yeah, I guess so. But on the other hand, I've seen films like this year's Under the Burning Sun, which is sort of a sci-fi indie about what happened after the catastrophe and what happens to people if there's all wasteland and stuff like that. So it filters in a little bit, I guess.
It does, but I wrote some big-time science fiction when I was in Hollywood under another name. I think the problem with science fiction, especially post-apocalyptic, is that it doesn't transfer into behavior now. The idea is we're supposed to be threatened by a negative future, and therefore we're going to act. But unfortunately, you get immersed in the film that is showing you all this negativity and later on. And psychologists say it doesn't really transfer back. So you could go to a film like Mr. Smith Goes to Washington or Citizen Kane or whatever that had tremendous interactivity with power and problems of the time and sort of instructed audiences. They didn't take them into the future. They took them deeper into the present and gave them the perspective on how they should be reacting to events at that time, not by a metaphoric trip into the future. And I don't, that's the kind of film that I don't see being made now. On the Waterfront would be another example. Those real social realism, interactive things that, at least in America, changed laws. They literally had that kind of an impact at the time, taking stories set identically with the same time period.
When you made Woodstock, it was a film that captured very much the moment in the U.S. Yeah. In those days, and the political feelings and the political activism, yeah, and the sort of communal feeling amongst young people, the revolution, as it was called back then. Right. And we had a film here at the festival, which came out 3 years after Woodstock. Of course, I'm talking about James William Guercio's Electra Glide in Blue, and you were at the screening because it was a right, one-man retrospective. He has even done less feature films than you did yourself. Yeah, it's only one movie, yeah, because he was a music producer, of course. And at the end of the screening, you said, in your opinion, it still holds up very well. So it's a totally different take about what's going on in America in the early 70s, but it's frightening to see a pessimistic movie about the American dream, yeah, that resonates so well 50 years later. So,
you're right. I think what I meant, of course, was that the line that I like from Guercio that I thought was really telling was, he said, you know what drew me to this character and the reason why I wanted to go with it was the simplicity of the guy, the basic honesty of him. That he wanted to be a good cop. He wanted to be the right kind of a human being, you know, and so on, and all this kind of craziness that was played out before him with the cops and with the hippies and so forth and so on. That Guercio, at heart, was this basically simple guy from the Midwest and wanted to do a certain thing in life with rock and roll and with film and so on. But I think that, what I would say is that Easy Rider was a masterpiece of allegorical filmmaking, really. You could say it was Shakespearean in structure. It was beautifully put together, and Electra Glide was, as Jim said himself, it was really a cop movie, you know, with hippies thrown in and stuff like that. But nonetheless, how beautifully photographed it was, and how evocative it was of the period, and had some really great performances and things to think about.
When Woodstock came out, people said that you single-handedly saved Warner Brothers because they sold a massive amount of tickets. They sold the soundtrack. So one would assume that you had free reign over your next project. But then again, it took 10 years until your next feature film. So you had ideas and projects in this gap, but it never came to anything. Can you tell us about these ideas, and why did it take you so long to make another movie?
Yeah. I had so many opportunities, as you say. Woodstock was such a monstrous hit. And of course, from Roger Ebert and everybody else, we got fantastic artistic and content review. My problem was that it was such a hit, and that I came from the documentary world. And I think I mentioned to you or to another audience that I really, really wanted to make a certain kind of film, because I was coming from political documentaries. And the first one that I wanted to make was sort of the ultimate revisionist film. I found out that the revolution in America was not correctly portrayed in the public schools, as you can imagine. So the one example I would give you is that the man who virtually started the revolution was Sam Adams. His cousin became the second president of America. But he was a firebrand, and he began the revolution basically by taking a rich guy's money, who had gone to Harvard with him, taking that money, buying drinks for guys in a tavern, and say, listen, you know, those British aren't treating us right there. You get out there with your guns on the village green. So he got him roaringly drunk, and what he wanted was the British to kill colonists, because they weren't being radicalized, they weren't rising up. And it worked like a fucking charm, right? So I made a movie. That was the opening of my movie, was a connivance, which was virtually unknown in America, but all the historians agreed that was true, that we couldn't get a revolution going. We had to start it ourselves, right? And it went just event after event after event. So many people loved the script. It was considered very expensive, and I ate up, you know, 5 years or whatever doing that. Then I wrote what I think was my best film, called CW2, which was the Second Civil War. And it was about a young guy inheriting his father's senatorial seat in Maine. And the young man didn't get along with the president in Washington or the rest of the Washington establishment. It was an environmental movie, and he wanted to have certain laws in his state that the feds were overriding. So, as a joke, virtually, he put secession on the ballot, because we can do that. If everybody votes, then the state is out. And again, through an alliance with an early computer guy, the vote was cast in favor of secession. The president calls in the National Guard. A bunch of people get killed, and then it goes out through television, and the end of the credits is that all of the states are seceding from the nation, and it's the end of America. People considered that script so powerful that they didn't want it made. I'm serious, you know. And then I wrote some science fiction, which were also very political. Ate up all that time. I had plenty of money, so I didn't have to take anybody's money. But I wanted to make a certain kind of film that would last and be a commentary on what was happening in America and not stay with. I didn't do another rock and roll movie. Fuck it. Why do it? And if you see the point, as Jack Warner said, if you want to send a message, go to fucking Western Union. Don't come to Hollywood. And I wanted to send messages. And unfortunately, Hollywood was changing from the day when they did Mr. Smith Goes to Washington and Citizen Kane, even though Orson Welles had a tremendous problem getting through his films. They were making adult films before World War II. But along come the 60s, television had hit, and they were now going for more frivolous, more entertaining movies as I entered the film industry. So I think that's another reason why I got invited here, is to talk. I'm a different sort of a filmmaker. You know, I never had to pay my dues. I started at the top, you know, and never had a kind of downside. And I have a certain attitude as a scientist and an observer about what films should do that other people don't. I think other people want to make a good film, regardless of what the subject matter is. That's not my agenda. I want to make a certain kind of film, and it's interactive with society, hopefully forward-looking, that sort of thing.
Keeping that in mind, it's rather strange that someone had the idea to put you in touch with a book like Wolfen by Whitley Strieber, which of course was a horror story.
Yeah.
That was not the kind of stuff that you were dreaming about, I guess.
No.
So what drew you to the book, or what did you see in the book, and what kind of your own vision had you in mind for making a picture out of this book?
Yeah, isn't that really peculiar? What really happened was that Mike Medavoy, who was a very big executive in Hollywood at that time, he was my age, and he'd been a very close friend and advisor and knew me well. He gave me a whole bunch of books that they wanted to make. This was Orion, you know. And somehow I stumbled on Wolf, and I liked the title. I had made documentary films that touched on the wilderness and so on. So I thought that was part of the ecological agenda and so on. And then he said, hey, don't worry about it. You can write the script, anything you want to do. So I said, well, I want to put in Indians and political intrigue and make it into a thriller, you could say, an international thriller, an ecological thriller, whatever. And and I said, I really don't want any of the werewolf or, you know, occult kind of thing in it. I want to make it really real. And I really want people to come away thinking, well, now those wolves were real and the Indians were real, so maybe the Indians and the wolves together were killing these people and whatever, that there was a realistic explanation for everything, and that they would then listen to the American Indians. And I thought, well, it would be a very interesting, high-level, metaphoric view of first the Dutch coming to America and establishing New Amsterdam, and then the English coming there with New York and so on, and building up all this industrial America on top. As Birgit would tell you, well, this was their land. I mean, the Indians had it. They just illegally took it all away. and who was taking care for it. And then, of course, the reason why we put the windmill up there was that the Dutch brought industrialization there, and the first industrial machine that hit America factually was a wind turbine, right? Ironically, now we think of them as good. So all of those things came together, and I thought I could make a very good metaphoric film, and Albert Finney signed on and so on. So we really converted. We took an idea or a title and then tried to make it into a vision of our own. And Mike said, well, the good thing is we're going to make this and we're going to give it a decent budget and so on. So you'll be able to do something that's your own. Unfortunately, then what happened was that they were delighted with, well, you've seen the film. They were delighted with the dailies. They thought, wow, this really looks fantastic. And the performances were good and so on. And then I think they had second doubts. I think they thought, wait a minute, we've got to make this back into a horror film. And that, of course, blew me away. I said, well, you approved my script. You know, we did I've done the script. And they said, well, that doesn't matter. We're going to recut it. And that was the end of that. I was offered many other things after that, even after Wolfen, because Wolfen turned out to be a beautiful film and well done and so on and so on. But I felt that I was suspicious by then of Hollywood, and basically I just left. I thought, this is never going to work out. I wrote a few more scripts and sold a couple of them for good money. Sold them because they wouldn't give me final cut. They would hire me as director, but once again, it was under that fragile, oh, wait a minute, you know, maybe I'm going to change this whole thing under you. And I didn't want to go through it again.
Rewatching the film just last night in the cinema, I thought there are three main aspects that still hold up pretty good. It's location, it's camera, and it's cast. Mm-hmm. So the location...
Well, that's a lot.
Yeah. it should amount for a good movie, right? So the location is totally unique. You cannot do this even with CGI or whatever. Yeah, you had a part of New York at a certain time where you could film really New York as a wasteland in the Bronx. Yeah, yeah. And that was a one once in a lifetime opportunity to film there and building your own church on top of it.
Yeah. That's true. And then to get Wall Street, people say it'd be very, you'd have to CGI Wall Street, that you can't do the things that we did at that time, and the bridges and so on, that a lot of the permissions that we had were only available because New York was a simpler time, and you had political people who were more sympathetic with the endeavors then. So I think that was great. And well, you've almost said it. You know, I wish you could have seen my film so we could sit here and criticize it. Well, fuck you, Wadley. I don't agree with your matter. But now I think it's very difficult to say. And I mentioned it here that one of the things people liked was that the fight between the police force, Albert Finney's character, that was chronically underfunded and kind of mocked, you know, and you know, as inefficient and so on. And now the upper rising private police forces that were guarding anybody who could pay the money, you know, and putting them out of business, and the sort of the competition between them and the sort of similarity between the Indians and the white people. Albert Finney and the New York Police Department became a sort of outcast unit. And I think people liked, if those ideas had been played out a little more clearly, that the bonding was going on between the cops at the bottom and the Indians at the bottom, that would have been socially more interesting.
The visuals are quite impressive still. You had Gary Fisher, and you had, of course, the man who did all the early Steadicam work, who invented it, Garrett Brown. So the looks of it are still holding up pretty good.
Yeah, I like the camera work. You know, I was a cameraman myself and did a little bit of it. But conceptually, we wanted the camera moving and capturing the big scenes, you know, the skyscrapers and everything. And I was very pleased. And as I say, I think Orion thought, wow, this is going to be a big, big hit. I think it was a mistake. Well, Medavoy really said publicly that, you know, that they made a big error and that maybe if they had really sold it as a political thriller, it could have made far more money and everybody's life in the future would have gone on a little bit better. But there we are.
To see this fantastic and young cast, Albert Finney, of course, was already a star at that time. Mm-hmm. But you had Gregory Hines, who did his first movie. Really. James Edward Olmos was pretty early on in his career. Diana Venora hasn't done much movies. She's also from theater. So that was
Tom Noonan.
Terrific. Yeah, yes, terrific cast.
Well, again, that was deliberate. I've done some theater myself and had a great respect for theater actors. All of them are theater actors, even Albert Finney. You know, he went on to do the movies, but I wanted serious, serious people to work with, and also not faces that were a little bit different from others. But you name all those people, and it was a wonderful experience to work with them, and unique characters, and they brought to life, even Tom Noonan, who, the funny, quirky aspects that he has, were delightful. Anyway.
If you look at the themes and the stuff you were talking about, the themes of capitalism, of surveillance, of colonialism, environmental issues, they are still there in the movie, but it's a little bit muddy, a little bit murky. So do you see it as a failed project, or is there still some value for you in this movie?
Of course, it has some value, but I think I unfortunately feel it's quite a flaw. You know, that if you don't get a chance to carry through a through line, right? Then what's the audience? They're going to get confused. And I think that was the problem. What does Dewey want? What does Albert want? And I think we had a solid through line with him and Diane Venora, and even her relationship, her moving away toward him and away from the industrial cops and so on. Before I lose you, I wanted to bring you up to date on what we do now, which is in media. We were just over to your Market of the Future. They have it going on right now today. Birgit and I work with the United Nations. We have a small foundation on climate change and natural resources and so on. We went over there, and the interesting thing is you go from booth to booth to booth, and it's all about the small picture. It's all about car sharing and bicycling and good food and going lighter on the planet as an individual. And then it was all about rights, child rights and so on. It had nothing to do with the future, by which I mean that I'm a physicist. If we don't get in order, get our act together, and gang up on 55 billion tons of greenhouse gas emissions going up into the air, and per capita, per person, Germany is way up there in the number of emissions, and the international agreement is not that the biggest population countries, like China, do something, it's that we do it by per capita, and that the rich countries go first. The point is that here we work on the future. We are really by saying that if we don't have an environment, if we run through all of our materials, for example, metals are getting more and more scarce. How are we going to make our wind turbines? How are we going to make our solar panels and so on? You go over to this fair, and in a way, we should be making a big movie about everyone thinking that they're cleaning up their act by cleaning up their own house, by buying a Tesla, by doing whatever. When they buy the Tesla and they don't change the coal plant that is making, as you know, everyone's opening more and more coal plants. We're all doing drill, baby, drill. If they don't change the energy supply to their Tesla, then nothing's going to happen. We're going to still emit the same amount that we did into the sky. So the point is, we're sort of working on a movie, and the movie is how do you get to the future? And we go and observe the people who are working on these tiny little details, and they think they're doing something. And we had really interesting conversations. I don't know that I'll ever be able to make that into an effective movie, but I've given you an example of what we are interested in terms of how society acts. And I guess we don't think that the movie is the right vehicle. We work behind the scenes with high-level politicians and scientists and so on, trying to convince them about how to use the science and how they should go about things. But if we circle back to the movies, I think maybe you would see it's the same idea. I always thought that you should put a movie together that made people understand something, understand how they fit into it, and understand how they could act effectively. And you may say, well, fucking Woodstock, it didn't do that. Well, in a way, it did. You know, you had interview after interview with the man who cleaned the toilet and the police chief and the festival goers and so on, who told you what they thought they should be doing and what the world was about and how things could go forward. And I think that was the big impact of Woodstock. When I came here, it was a huge hit, of course, in Germany at the time in 1970. What people took away from it was, I want to change my life. I want to change German politics. I want to really save the environment. Everyone talked about it as an environmental movie, not really as a music movie, but about where are we going? How do we get back to the land, back to the garden, you know, that sort of thing. And then that led off into discussions about what you should do politically and socially and morally, you know, that sort of thing.
I cannot let you go without asking one question about the world premiere of Uncovering Wolfen, because that's a movie by Stuart Book from Great Britain, mm-hmm. about your movie Wolfen. Were you in any kind of way involved in it? Have you seen it? How is your connection to this picture? Because he's a documentary filmer who always does projects long term about more or less forgotten or underrated movies. The Keep by Michael Mann is his other big project. Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about Uncovering Wolfen?
I've never seen it. I will be the first to see it. I think we completely cooperated with Stuart when he called us years ago and wanted to do it. But there wasn't much. I gave interviews to him on the telephone and otherwise, but we've never met. I totally approve of that kind of a movie and wanted to help him, but what can I say? We did as much as we could, and I think did everything he asked. And I'll be interested to see what went on. I like the idea, actually, of looking at the process and looking at the interaction of people. It's funny that Grecio and I shared a producer named Rupert Hitzig. And Jim was very kind in his critique. He said Rupert was just not on message. And a good man, interesting guy, many talents. But we both had the same problem. I think Rupert wanted desperately to be a producer and a writer. And couldn't get into what was being made right in front of him. And I think that's often, I'll be interested to see what goes on there, that how the other people saw me and the project and the wolves and the Indians, and it'll be interesting.
Yeah, thanks for stepping by here in Oldenburg once again, and have a great time here at the festival.
Well, I also will play you a compliment. Birgit and I are big radio fans. We've owned low-power FM stations, and we love the podcasts and so on. We get disappointed in the movies. We like the transportiveness of radio, where you can supply your own imagery. So thanks very much. I enjoy it.